Welcome to a Thursday, the 25th of May, and welcome to KUOW's The Record. I'm Bill Radke. Join us on Twitter, at KUOW. Seattle is the fastest growing big city in America, according to today's new Census Bureau numbers. Are you new here? What did you expect when you moved here? And then what was the reality? We're going to take your call in about 25 minutes. We're going to be at 206-543-5869, 206-543-KUOW. Aaron Katz is here to talk about something completely different. Hi.
Hi, Bill.
But I'm curious. Aaron, by the way, is with the UW School of Public Health, teaches health policy. So we're going to talk about why a new CBO number would be so significant that it would inspire a congressional candidate to put his hands around somebody's neck and throttle them, body slam them. But as I said, we're going to talk about newcomers. You and I were chatting. You are an oldcomer. You and I both have been here a while. So you moved here in the 70s.
Late 70s.
How would you answer the question? What did you expect of Seattle when you came, and then what was the reality?
Well, Seattle was, I was from the Midwest. Seattle was the Western vanguard, the progressive left coast, and it was a very attractive place, beautiful mountains and ocean and stuff like that. And, it was just a very comfortable, friendly place, and it was. And I think, largely still is, but it's a big city now.
Yeah.
Before, it was a small city that wanted to be a big city.
We'll talk about the pros and cons of that in a few minutes. Maybe Aaron Katz will rush to out of the studio to his phone and then call in. Who knows? At 206-543-KUOW. So, as I said, Aaron, you're here to talk about this health care bill because our listeners may remember a few weeks ago, the House of Representatives passed a Republican plan to repeal and replace the Affordable Care Act, also known as Obamacare. And at the time, Democrats complained that Republicans voted on that bill before the Congressional Budget Office had another chance to score its impact. That's when the CBO studies the bill and predicts how many people would gain or lose health insurance and what it would cost the Treasury. Well, that scoring has happened now. We got it. The CBO estimates 23 million additional people would become uninsured under this law compared to Obamacare within the next decade. So, Aaron, 23 million more. How significant is that new CBO number compared to what the CBO said about the last Republican health care plan? Is this big news?
No, I don't think it's big news.
Okay.
It's roughly the same as the CBO report on the original bill that didn't pass the House of Representatives. It's a million or two fewer, but probably within the margin of error. I think the larger point is that basically it suggests that if the House bill became law, it would result in a doubling of the uninsured rate. And what's really significant about that is the Affordable Care Act resulted in almost the halving of the uninsured rate around the country.
This is Obamacare.
Obamacare.
Yeah.
And that was the first time in my very long career now that we made a dent, much less a big dent, in the uninsured rate.
Laws have winners and losers. Who would this latest Republican effort, healthcare effort, who would it help? Who would it hurt?
Well, first of all, it repeals a whole bunch of taxes that were mostly levied on wealthy people, so they would benefit, and on certain corporations. They wouldn't have to pay those taxes, so they benefit. As far as the people who are in the individual insurance market, people who are young and healthy could benefit, depending on what states decide. And people who are older and or sicker would lose big time because their premiums would go up a lot, according to the CBO estimates. And the other group that would lose is are the group of people who have gained coverage under Medicaid in states like Washington. Most states, about 33 or 34 states, expanded Medicaid under the Affordable Care Act and greatly increased the number of people who had coverage in Medicaid. And the American Health Care Act would essentially rescind those gains.
Okay, so that's a rundown of some of the winners and losers under this measure. Again, we're talking about this on the occasion of the Congressional Budget Office coming out and finally getting a chance to say how this Republican plan might affect health insurance. And we said 23 million people more people would lose insurance compared to Obamacare over the next decade. Another way to look at this comes from the House Speaker, Paul Ryan, who says those 23 million are people who won't be forced. They won't be mandated to buy health insurance. Here he is this morning.
If the government's going to stop forcing people to buy something that they don't want to buy, then they won't buy it. And that's basically what CBO is saying.
Okay. CBO reports 23 million more freedoms from people who are not mandated.
Yeah, I guess, you know, this does just come down to sort of values and policy goals. So if the goal is to have as little government involvement and as few government mandates in our lives, Speaker Ryan just said that that's, you know, that seems to be one of the goals.
That's the goal.
And, you know, the CBO says you win. I don't think that's the goal of the healthcare system. So I think the goal of the healthcare system is to make sure that people have the care that they need when they need it at a price or a cost that's affordable to them. And what we know about insurance is that in order for insurance to work, that is, for it to help people when they need care, to get that care affordably, you have to have a lot of healthy people in the pool.
Yeah.
Okay, and the House of Representatives bill would likely reduce the number of healthy people in the insurance pools.
Okay, so we'll let the American people through their representatives decide how they want the healthcare system to work. This is Aaron Katz, who teaches health policy in the UW School of Health. This is interesting to me. Washington State, we talk about whether we're going to mandate or not. Washington State kind of tried this, got rid of a mandate in the 90s, and what happened then?
Yeah, so there's some similarities. So in 1993, the legislature passed a comprehensive healthcare reform law with mandates on individuals and employers, et cetera, very similar to the Affordable Care Act, and laid on the insurance market a number of regulations that restricted the ability of insurers to figure out who the healthy risks were and to target their marketing and to enroll those people and try to avoid people who were who had medical problems. So to restrict the ability of insurers to do that. In 95, the legislature repealed the mandates and a lot of the other provisions, but kept those restrictions on the insurance companies' decision-making, on mm-hmm, their behavior.
Mm-hmm.
And over a number of years, what the insurance companies found is, we're losing our shirt.
Why would we want to do this?
Yeah, why would we do this? We are not able to bring in sufficient income to cover the medical costs. And at some point in the late 1990s, they said, we're not writing any more policies in the individual market, and basically forced the state legislature to draw back on a number of those regulations. So it's just that what we found in that experience is, you know, it's like the thread that you pull out of a piece of cloth, and one thing is tied to another, and you can't unweave it easily. So that's what the Republicans are finding, is that it's very difficult to pull out one piece that they don't like and have the rest of it stand.
We're going to keep following this as it works its way through Congress. And then the next time we talk, Aaron, I'd like to ask you about something that's working its way through California's legislature, mm-hmm, which is they're talking about maybe going to single-payer health care. Mm-hmm. And I want to know how likely that is in Washington State. That's our bite at the apple for now, though. I just want to pause. I want this to be digestible. Okay.
Yeah.
I'm smart. Aaron Katz just smartened me up about what's happening with Congress and this new CBO big number thing. And so let's keep watching that. And I want to talk about whether if single health, I don't know if it can happen in California. Why not? Could it happen in Washington State? Why not? So will you come in again?
I will absolutely come in.
And we'll bite that healthy apple.
Love to do it.
Okay, great. Aaron Katz is teaching health policy in the UW School of Public Health. He was a newcomer too. to Seattle in how many years? 40 years ago. Okay, and we're asking you, coming up a little bit later in the show, we're taking your call about what did you expect when you moved here? What was the reality? This is on the occasion of the Seattle being the fastest growing big city in this country. Our number is 206-543-5869, 543-KUOW. Aaron, thanks a lot.
Been a pleasure, Bill.
KUOW's The Record in a moment. It's KUOW's The Record. I'm Bill Radke. We're on Twitter, at KUOW. So, here's the story. Greg Gianforte is a Republican running in a special election for a House seat in Montana. Ben Jacobs is a reporter for The Guardian newspaper, and yesterday their paths crossed in a surprising and newsworthy way.
Get the hell out of here! The last guy did the same thing. You were The Guardian?
Yes, and you just broke my
glasses. The last guy did the same damn thing.
You just body slammed me and broke my glasses.
Get the hell out of here.
You'd like me to get the hell out of here, I'd also like to call the police.
Police were called. That is the audio of Gianforte allegedly assaulting Jacobs after being asked a question about health care, which we were discussing for the last few minutes. The voters in Montana today, as just so happens, are deciding whether to send Greg Gianforte to Congress because of this special election. Voting is today. The thing is, Montana votes partially by mail. So as of yesterday, half the ballots had already been cast. So a lot of people can't change their vote. And this leads us to Washington State, because across this country, the body slamming has voters asking, wait, could I change my vote if I voted by mail? Very relevant here in Washington, where we do vote by mail. So let's ask our director of elections at King County, Julie Wise. Hello.
Hi.
I wondered, among you and your colleagues, what has the conversation among you elections people been today since this throttling, the body slamming?
Mostly about around if this happened in King County, what would we recommend for voters, or what information would be able to share with them?
Yeah, what do you want to share?
So in King County, we see about 26% of our voters on average voting still on Election Day.
And, what was the percentage?
About 26% on Election Day.
On Election Day, so not in advance, not by mail. Uh-huh.
And so, I mean, the short answer is no, you can't take back your vote. But theoretically, you know, one could see if their ballot had been received in our office, and if not, they could go online and download a ballot and email it in, or they could access their ballot at one of our accessible voting centers.
Okay, they can't change that. Why can't they just call you up and say, hey, I voted one way, it's my vote, I would like to change it now, the election's not over?
As soon as that ballot gets back into our office and we start processing it, we're actually removing the voter's information from the ballot itself so that we keep the voter's vote private. So it's immediately separated, therefore we wouldn't be able to go back and grab your specific ballot to make that change.
Okay, but if I caught it before you verified my signature, does that change things?
No, it's already going to be in the process. It's going to be immediately being removed right after that. We wouldn't be able to go back in and grab that ballot and pull it out.
Okay, so is there a line somewhere? So you're telling me a candidate body slams a reporter, pile drives a reporter, I cannot change my vote if I voted, but is there any line where you would change the procedure? I mean, a candidate, you know, kills somebody. Any scenario where that would be so unusual that it would change our voting process?
No, those are the laws that we have in place in vote by mail. Again, people do have the option to go online or to go to an accessible voting center. We're happy to help voters track where their ballot is in the process. We have an online ballot tracker. And we can also help people by phone to help them access other avenues. But no, your ballot, you get one vote here in Washington State, and that first ballot in is the first ballot counted.
Okay, so bottom line, it sounds like, Julie, take that into account, whether it's a revelation about the about a Hillary email investigation or whatever it is, if it's important for you to be up on the latest current events, take that into account, because if you mail early, then you know you vote once and that's it.
Of course, as an election administrator, I encourage people to cast their ballots early. That way, we have meaningful election results for all of us come election night. These things can happen a night after election or days after an election. So I always encourage people to get their ballot in so that therefore you're not waiting to the last minute and have that chance of having your ballot not counted.
So you would prefer us not be up on the latest current events before we vote for our candidates. You like it that way.
Well, I mean, I think these are rare sort of situations that happen, but I do encourage people to make sure that their vote counts. And the way that you make sure your vote counts in Vote by Mail world is making sure that you get it submitted on time and get it into the office.
Okay, and then deal with what comes. Julie Wise, Director of Elections for King County. Thanks for clearing that up here on KUOW.
Thank you.
More of The Record coming up. Okay, hop on the line, newcomer, because as I said earlier, we're taking your phone call. Seattle has new numbers out from the Census Bureau, and we are the fastest growing big city in the United States. I know it's kind of not news to you, right? This has been an ongoing thing, but it's a good day to pause and say, you came here. Why did you come here? What did you expect? And then what did you not expect to be true about being a newcomer here? And we're going to get into issues of identity. How do we have an identity if we keep changing and stuff like that? That's in about 10 minutes. But if you'll call now, we'll get you on the line, 206-543-5869. 206, that's the area code here. It's 206 in Seattle proper, 543-KUOW. So the premise there is that people are arriving. But here's the flip side. As all these people move in, some people move out. For example, Kate Lebo grew up in Vancouver, Washington, and she thought of Seattle as the ultimate person maker. She'll tell you what she meant by person maker. She moved here after college in 2005. 7 years later, she couldn't afford her Ballard life anymore. So she lived all over the state, finally settled in Spokane. And she came in the studio when she was in Seattle with me to talk about life in Seattle. Kate, thanks for coming.
Thanks for having me.
You talked about Seattle as the ultimate person maker. What does that mean, person maker?
Well, I grew up in Vancouver, Washington. I went to college in Bellingham. And what that means is that I always had my eye on Seattle as the place I would eventually end up that could tell me who I was going to be, that was going to make me somehow. You know,
Seattle going to make you?
It was, you know, there were shows happening and there was art and there was people and there was fashion and there was just all this, you know, influences that I was hungry for. I wanted to go there and I wanted to be influenced and to meet kind of the people who would help me become whatever I was going to be. I mean, of course, what I wanted to be was a writer, right? So when I finally did move to Seattle, I made sure I moved to Capitol Hill so I could go hang out at Hugo House.
Yep.
At the time, and remains, you know, a beacon for the young who are trying to figure that out.
So you lived here 7 years, and how did your person-making go? Did you become that person you wanted to be in Seattle?
I would say so. You know, gosh, that's such a... It's an ongoing project. Let's put it that way, right? But what happened while I was in Seattle was I made a lot of friends who played music, a lot of friends who were visual artists, a lot of writers, got into the community or aspect of the arts and the way that the arts can mean so much to so many different people. They don't necessarily mean I go get an MFA and I write the Pulitzer Prize winning book. They can mean I'm trying to figure out how to tell my story so that I can break whatever silence is inside me, things like that. I'd see that all the time at Hugo House. There's this real DIY spirit to this town that I love, that influenced me deeply, and I think is one of the ways that it made me who I am.
And then you got kicked out. You felt like you were kicked out of Seattle. Mm-hmm. Tell us about that.
Mm-hmm. So what happened was I had finished up grad school. I had decided not to go back to full-time work as either an arts administrator, or at the time what was beckoning was like an Amazon job, which of course, if I would have chosen that, I wouldn't be in this predicament. I would have been able to afford the rent increase that was just on the horizon. Instead, I decided I wanted to organize my life around my writing, be a freelancer, and kind of allow that type of the type of instability that makes room for being able to make more art, at least for me. But what that also made room for was my landlord to get someone new in who could afford the new rent increase. I looked at that and said, it's time for me to go. If this is the way that the neighborhood's going, I've been seeing it happening. I lived in Ballard at the time. I'd been seeing it happening to friends. I'd been seeing it happening to businesses. And what that told me was at the level that I was currently at in trying to be an artist and make my living as an artist, I needed to be in a place where instability wasn't so expensive. But it was one of those, you know, it's like a relationship moment where you're like, is this really going to work out? Do I really want to double down? Am I going to be bigger, more generous, more rooted in the end? Or am I just going to continue to feel like I'm scrapping, you know, for the next 10, 15, 20 years? And to me, what I wanted wasn't that particular struggle. I wanted a different struggle. So I left.
You could have married Amazon.
Right? They weren't, well, they needed to ask a little more nicely.
Oh, yeah?
No, not really. I'm kidding.
You're in Spokane now. What is life like in Spokane?
Spokane's great. I have been incredibly happy there. I've been figuring out my place in the city and watching a place that, you know, has for years and years been the brunt of jokes from Seattleites.
What is the Seattle knock on Spokane?
The Seattle knock on Spokane, I think the best way to describe it for me would be when I told folks in Seattle that I was moving to Spokane, they were like, but what are you going to do there? I had a really hard time convincing one of my best friends that it wasn't a small farming community, right? It's 200,000 people.
Uh-huh.
It's not, I mean, there's farms around it, just like there's farms around Seattle, right? But it's not the podunk, tiny town in the middle of nowhere that our imagination makes it. The other thing that I heard was, oh, maybe you can go start an art scene there, which I thought was hilarious because there are a ton of fantastic artists who are already there. And what that got me to thinking about was kind of the pioneer imagination and the way that Manifest Destiny continues to be at work in the way that we try to imagine ourselves into new places. So when we have to leave, when we have to go to a place that is not our home, when we make that choice, I guess I'm curious about like what type of imaginative power do we have to harness to imagine ourselves in that place? And the pioneer says that place is blank. You can go there and make it happen. And reality says people already live here. This is someone else's home that you're trying to make your home. So I approached Spokane that way, that this is someone else's home and I'm going to try to make my home here too, rather than I'm breezing in from Seattle, folks. Let's, you know, see what cool things we can create that you haven't had before, right? Because that, I mean, what kind of awful attitude is that? And it's not true.
Now, last month, The Stranger did a special issue on Spokane, and some reporters spent a couple of days there, wrote about life in Spokane, and not everybody in Spokane was happy about that. What kind of reactions did you see?
So I saw people, I saw many reactions. One reaction I saw was, The Stranger, you know, you've been making fun of Spokane for years. Don't come here and write about how Seattleites can move here and plunder our resources. Don't come here, and don't come here and tell us that we're cool or that we're not cool. Like, we're tired of your judgment. We don't need it and we don't care. Another response was, hey, cool. Like, Seattle's coming to check us out. Like, let's host them and let's show them what's new in the city and old in the city and cool about the city. Why not, you know? And my response was, you know, I wanted The Stranger to talk to people who are from Spokane, not to Seattle transplants, to Spokane. So not to me, not to other transplants that I knew. Because the story that we're telling, I mean, you're hearing the story I'm telling about Spokane. It's a transplants story, not the city's story.
I take it you were even a little nervous about talking to us in the wake of The Stranger piece?
Yeah, I was a little nervous because I don't want to... I feel really sensitive about the fact that I'm going to present Spokane as a transplant and that I'm also going to be talking about the reasons that I left Seattle. I feel in the middle, I guess is what I'm trying to say, that I don't want what I say or what anyone hears in this interview to be the last, any kind of last word about what Spokane is like, but rather have it be a jumping off point for people to go find people from Spokane and what they're saying about the city. And just visit. Come see it. You know, it's cool.
Do you worry that more people are going to split Seattle, get priced out, show up in Spokane and ruin it?
That was the worry of the people who were saying, Stranger, please don't come here. They imagined the special edition being like a tourist brochure for priced out Seattleites. I think my worry is not that. I don't have any right to worry about that. and people need to take care of themselves and go figure out how to, you know, live. So I think my worry is more people moving to the city with a sense of, you know, here are some resources that I can plunder, or here is a blank space for me to fill, rather than here is a home that is someone else's home, and how do I figure out how to contribute to it or find my place here? That's what I hope for anyone who's moving. I mean, anywhere.
Kate Lebo is a, what did you say, a Spokaneite?
Yeah.
Yeah. Put hands on hips. Yeah. Yes, I am.
I am.
Former Seattleite.
I'm a citizen of Washington State.
Right. Mm-hmm. Well, thanks for coming back to Seattle for a little bit.
Thanks for having me.
Now, if you are planning to move out of Seattle, or you already have, then we would love to hear your story. Email us at record@kuow, or call and leave us a message, 206-221-3663. In a few minutes, we're going to look at the flip side of all of this. We're going to look at new people moving in. New Census Bureau numbers today show Seattle is America's fastest growing big city. What did you expect when you moved here very recently? And then what was the reality? Give us a call at 206-543-5869. That's 543-KUOW. That's the number when we take your calls, 543-KUOW. Sarah answered us on Facebook saying, "The extremely high cost of living surprised me. I work for the county government. My partner is an EMT in the Shoreline area. Together we make less than $75,000 a year. We will never be able to afford a home in this city, not in the current marketplace." What's your story? What did you expect? What did you find? 206-543-KUOW, and we'll take your calls coming up on KUOW in about 5 minutes. We'll do that. So call in now and get on the line. KUOW's The Record. I'm Bill Radke. So glad to have you with us today. The ballots are nearly all counted in British Columbia's elections, and the winner is about to be revealed to you, maybe, possibly, if there is a winner. Vancouver Sun columnist Vaughn Palmer, hello.
Hi, Bill, and I'm sorry, but all the ballots are counted, and I still can't tell you who won.
Why not?
Oh, man. It's up in the air. So there's 87 seats in the BC legislature, and they finished counting the ballots for all 87 seats yesterday, and the result is inconclusive. The Liberals, who've been the government for the last 16 years, fell short of a majority, one short. They have 43 seats. The New Democrats, party of the left, the opposition here in BC, they fell short as well. They have 41 seats, and there are three members of the upstart Green Party of British Columbia. They have the balance of power. And so we still don't know which of the two big parties will be the government once they work things out.
Vaughn, this is power sharing in the United States. Our understanding is that we have two legislative bodies, and this is a federal level, two legislative bodies, yep, and an executive branch with same idea in the states, most of them, that realistically they're either controlled by Republicans or Democrats, and that's power sharing. What's the important difference of how what life is like in British Columbia under power sharing?
Well, so imagine if you only had one house, no president, and the Speaker of the House of Representatives was going to be the President and the Speaker and everything else all rolled into one. I mean, essentially, the Premier of British Columbia is the leader of the party that has the majority of seats in British Columbia in the legislature. She has a seat there herself. It is a she at the moment, Christy Clark. Mm-hmm. And she has all the executive power and most of the legislative power as well in one office. But if she doesn't have a majority, she can't pass legislation. She can't pass budgets. She doesn't really control things. And she needs a partnership with another party. So while I speak to you at the moment, somewhere here in the provincial capital of British Columbia, a negotiating team for the Green Party and a negotiating team for the Liberals are meeting to discuss power sharing. And the Greens, being pretty smart, are bargaining with the other party as well. So they'll be meeting with them tomorrow to see who can cut the best possible deal for the Greens to get what they want out of government.
And that's where British Columbia stands after more than 2 weeks of waiting for these results. I'm talking with Vaughn Palmer of the Vancouver Sun. Vaughn, on another subject, we were talking about how almost 100 people flocked to Stevenson Harbor in Richmond to glimpse the sea lion, who famously grabbed a girl off a dock and into the water. And some people, curious people, brought their kids to that dock. Some people brought some food for the sea lion, so not great decision-making there. But I understand some people are using that viral video, the sea lion grabs child video, as a teaching tool.
Yeah, Canadian regulators and the people in charge of that dock at Stevenson are warning people, and they're starting to threaten fining them that, you know, do not feed wild animals. As someone said, you know, a sea lion does not view you as your friend. They view you as lunch. Mm-hmm. And what happened there is the animal was being fed in the water with bread, and it grabbed the little girl, thinking, I guess, that she was something to eat, which happens. She's very, very lucky to have survived. If the sea lion had hooked her clothing at all in its teeth, it could have dragged her so deep that she would have drowned. So she's very lucky to have survived. But, you know, people are not that smart around wild animals, and they may have to start finding people about feeding sea lions there. You know, they're cute little animals. They feed, but they're huge, right? A sea lion would be, what, 700 pounds, 7 feet long? You don't have much of a chance against an animal like that. And nobody would offer a cheeseburger to a grizzly bear in their neighborhood, but apparently people think feeding seals and sea lions is okay.
Yes, even though lion is right there in the name of the animal, it has not broken through to us.
And feeding them is not good for the animal either. I mean, giving a sea creature that needs to fatten up for mating season in the wintertime white bread is not really the best thing to be feeding them anyway. So that's another reason why they shouldn't be doing it. So as you say, a teachable moment, Bill, but, you know, I hope those people realize just how lucky they are. This thing could have been a tragedy. That child may not have survived.
Yes, indeed. All right, we'll see whether the teachability breaks through or whether they just have to cordon off this dock to the tourists, because lesson not learned so far. But Vaughn Palmer, filling you in there on the news from BC, Vancouver Sun columnist Vaughn Palmer. Thanks as always.
Bye, Bill, and maybe next week I'll have a government to report.
Yeah, when you get a government, will you let us know?
I will.
Okay. KUOW is The Record, back in a moment. KUOW is The Record. I'm Bill Radke. Join us on Twitter at KUOW. Join us right now on the phone, 206-543-KUOW. I'll tell you why. You feel this. You feel what we're about to talk about. Every time you walk down the street, get in your car, hang out at your favorite local place, it feels more crowded. It is not your imagination. It's not just the construction cranes and the new buildings and the traffic, but we got numbers, too, showing today that Seattle is the fastest-growing big city in America. Between July 2015 and July 2016, an average 57 people per day moved into just the city of Seattle. So we want to hear from you. Have you just moved here? Welcome. What did you expect when you moved here, and what was the reality? Again, give us a call right now, 206-543-5869, 543-KUOW. And while you're calling 543-KUOW, we're going to talk about the excitement and the tension that goes with growing this region so fast. My guest has been writing about exactly that in the Seattle newsletter, The Evergrey. Monica Guzman, welcome back.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Good to see you. So you moved to Seattle yourself 10 years ago now?
10 years ago.
Well, I'll put the question to you. What were your expectations of the city?
Well, at that point, I'd never come to visit. I had seen the show Frasier, and I had this I had this idea that it was a smart city where people had a lot of creative things going on and liked to pursue them, and that's about all I knew.
Well, I think you made it a little smarter, but I'm curious how the city met or did not meet your expectation.
I think there's something about the city that was less polished than I expected that I really appreciated.
Like less polished.
Yeah, like this pride, this kind of grittiness, this quirkiness and weirdness that I think the city really values in itself.
Is there an example of what you mean by gritty or quirky that you can use to illustrate?
Well, I remember, since I moved here 10 years ago, people were talking about how Belltown at that time had just, you know, all these condos, they're all within 5 years old. But
I lived in one of those.
Yeah, there you go. Yeah. But that before then, you know, this place was a little more gritty.
Yeah.
People would say that kind of lamenting
yes,
change.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah, and the sidewalk still had the planks from the industrial sort of history. When I moved in to Belltown, right across the street from me was a union shop before,
oh.
you know, now it's a high rise. Yeah. But I think I was seen as one of those, you know, either interlopers or condofiers, you know,
yes.
like,
yep.
and this is longer ago. This is 95, I think,
oh, well,
when I moved
yeah.
there. But it was like, you know, either pioneer or, I don't know, yuppie, depending on how you look
right,
at it. Right,
right. Yeah, when I moved here, the Olympic Sculpture Park, I think, was just opening.
Okay.
So, yeah, it was different.
So we're talking, as I was saying, about these new Census Bureau numbers, Seattle, fastest growing big city in America. And again, we're taking your call, 543-KUOW, 543-5869, asking how Seattle has met your expectation or not. Monica Guzman, your Seattle newsletter, The Evergrey, asked people what is our identity? Because, you know, when we're changing this fast, who are we if we keep changing? I want to play a little sample of the people that you met.
They're probably wearing a North Face rain jacket.
They always look like they're going hiking, I guess.
Ready to go hiking at a moment's notice.
It's all in the shoes, and you'll see people dressed in a suit wearing hiking boots.
I feel like whenever I'm at the grocery store, it always feels like everyone's about to go or just came from the gym.
I was raised in a no-umbrella household.
Stereotypically, I think, would not have an umbrella.
There's always like a Subaru or a Volvo involved, it seems like, so I definitely have fallen right into that.
Someone who's very progressive.
They care about their city, they care about the environment.
Someone that is very educated.
I don't know if reserved is the right word, but we're pretty laid back and chill for the most part.
And maybe drink coffee. Gotta drink some coffee.
Those are some takes on a Seattle identity. But Monica, some people told you it's hard to have an identity when we're changing this fast.
Oh, absolutely. Especially a common one. I think that recently you just hear a lot more conversations that start with, so how long have you been here? What did you move here? What do you do? It's a little bit of that test, you know, like
yeah.
how much do we really have in common and to what degree are we actually part of the same idea of what the city is?
Yeah. Some people even feel it's a status question. And I have we're going to talk a little bit more about that. I also captured some of those comments about that feeling of what did you say? It's like a test.
Yeah.
How long are you one of us?
Are you a local?
Are you a local?
Take. To claim local status in Seattle is a pretty fascinating question. How many years do you have to be here?
Yeah.
You have to behave a certain way. What?
Yeah. We are on the air with you when you call in, 543-KUOW. Anthony moved here in November from Philly. Welcome, Anthony.
Hey, Bill. How's it going?
Good, good. You got a job here as a geologist, and what surprised you? What did you expect and not expect?
Well, you know, as you talked about, the accessibility to mountains and the outdoor culture here definitely lived up to the hype. But I would say that what did not meet my expectations was my research, you know, kind of fell through. The prices were much higher than any of the, you know, online calculators expected for salary comparisons and whatnot. And I just think it couldn't keep up with the IT boom.
You mentioned that you we're expecting mountain accessibility, and you got it. Not just mountains, but accessibility. I wonder, do you, between traffic and, you know, maybe the hours you have to work in order to afford a place, do you really, you find mountains as accessible as you'd hoped?
Well, they're more accessible than Philadelphia, I'll tell you. it took me road trips before to get out here. So, you know, from my advantage, yeah, from my perspective, yeah, they're more accessible. But you're right, traffic does get pretty bad. Just got to leave early in the morning and, you know, have good music in the car.
Okay. Well, newbie Seattleite, that's Anthony in West Seattle. Do you want to say one thing to the people who've been here longer, the city that you have joined, the people that you've joined?
I'm sorry, Bill. You said one thing to say to the people
yeah.
I've joined?
Yeah. Any message you have, you know, people who've been here longer than you are listening to one of our new neighbors now. We're fastest growing because of people like you. Anything you want to tell the rest of us?
You know, I'm not here to take over. I just want to blend in.
There you go.
Not here to take over. I just want to blend in. Thanks for your call, Anthony. If you're,
I appreciate it.
I appreciate your calling. If you're new and it hasn't taken yet, if Seattle is still growing on you, here are some encouraging words from Bob on our Facebook page. Bob says, soon you will be an expert at driving slowly in the fast lane to teach everyone else a lesson for wanting to go faster than you. So there's an example of, I think that is an identity of ours that's been around a while. I don't know anymore whether how true these identities are.
I think that's part of it, right? Anthony was saying, I want to blend in. But it's difficult to blend in when something is literally transforming right now. Right. I don't think even the people who were born here really fully understand what moment we're in and how to what degree it might be changing us.
Yeah, for example, we've all heard of the Seattle freeze. I've been here many decades, and that's an old Seattle idea.
Yep.
But I've heard people say, and I'm not really the one to ask because I don't know if I have perspective, but I've heard that the Seattle freeze is kind of thawing because so many people are here from someplace else.
Yeah, it does seem that way sometimes, although I've also heard people say that it's the opposite, that there's this clash of identities building between natives and transplants,
yeah,
and sort of a little bit of suspicion going back and forth. So it's hard to say.
You know, that reminds me, when I moved here I moved here a long time ago, but when I lived in Belltown in the 90s and I was single, a knock on Seattle was that straight women used to complain about men not asking them on dates.
Oh, really?
Yes. And straight men would complain about women dressing sort of unflatteringly. That was a very common conversation in the 90s.
Wow.
And I thought then that it's because we're trying to find a new way to be men and women and people.
Yeah.
And I kind of think that's become clearer today. I think we see it, that's more of a positive thing, the idea that we're not conforming to old ways.
Oh, yeah. I think Seattle has a real individualistic streak, and it shows itself in our politics and just the way we govern ourselves and behave. Absolutely, yeah.
I noticed in your we're talking to Monica Guzman from Evergrey, and in the Seattle newsletter, in the video you made, several people talked about how you get local status.
I sort of wonder if you can ever really gain local status. I know I've been chasing it for a while.
Honestly, I think you have to be born here. That's what I have figured out, despite circles of friends that I have managed to weasel my way into that are locals and I'm the one outsider.
I don't think it's based on time. I don't think it's you have to be here for 30 years. You don't have to be born here. You have to have an appreciation of what makes Seattle, Seattle.
I haven't even visited the top of the Space Needle yet, so I don't think I can call myself a local.
I think that you have earned local status when you're willing to do things in the rain that people in other regions would say put off for another day.
So true.
Like,
yes,
whether it's working your yard or going to the grocery store or grilling outside.
The native part, is not as important as just kind of becoming part of the place, learning about the place.
I think you become part of the fabric of this community by virtue of how you lean in to taking care of the well-being of this community.
If you're willing to give to the community and it's not just take, if it's a two-way street, then people are open to having other folks move here.
Some of the people in this video made by the Evergrey talking about local status, and we have a phone call. We're taking your call at 543-KUOW, asking what your experience is like if you're new here. Mitch, you came here from San Diego, correct?
Yes, that's correct.
What did you expect coming here from San Diego, and what did you actually find?
Well, I think coming from San Diego, I expected a lot more rain, but of course, outside of San Diego, where it rains at all, is a lot more rain than San Diego gets.
Uh-huh.
But it's really, like these summers, I would take a Seattle summer over a San Diego summer any day.
Oh.
Yeah, a lot of people would. Okay, any other surprises?
Yeah, I was surprised. I heard you guys talking about the freeze. I felt like that was really real. And as someone who is really outgoing and social, I'd find that people are really friendly here, but they're not, they're nice, but they're not really friendly. And it took a while for, folks to kind of warm up to you.
So talk about that.
Oh, sorry, go ahead.
Yeah, what's an example? Can you think of an actual interaction you had where you sort of expected there to be more warmth and friendliness and there wasn't?
Yeah, I met my neighbor, and he was really friendly. He was really like, hey, man, you know, come on over if you need anything, whatever. And, you know, I would keep on being like, hey, dude, like, let's hang out. You have this open invite, and I'm going to take it. And it took me a while. It took about 6 months for us to actually hang out.
Wow.
I also tend to find that people really hole up in the winter, and in the summer, everyone's out. Everyone's like, hey, man, it's been a while. Where have you been? And I'm like, I've been here.
Yeah, I get the sense with the weather sometimes that what might be interpreted as somebody's just standing me up, you know, somebody says they're going to meet me or whatever, wants to, but then later cancels. But actually, it's that a lot of us Seattleites still just, we look outside sometimes. We go, never mind. I'm going to stay in.
One more question for you, Mitch. We heard people talking about local status, like, and one guy called it, talked about chasing status. Do you feel that being relatively new here is somehow that you're in the one down, that you lack status? Do you feel that? And if so, what's an, or whether you do or don't, what's an illustration of that?
I mean, I lack status because I work in social work, so I don't know, like, where to go with that. I guess I think people, where are you from? That's a question I get a lot. I tend to find, too, not being from here, I got a steal of an apartment in Ballard, so people would be like, oh, where are you living at? I'd say Ballard, and people would just be like, oh, like, how can you afford Ballard?
Oh, wow.
You know, there's a lot of kind of those intricacies that a lot of us transplants don't really know about.
Well, Mitch, a Ballard social worker is good with me. I don't know what you did to afford Ballard, and you don't have to tell us publicly. It's your business. But welcome, Mitch. Glad to have you here.
Thanks so much. Love the show.
Thank you. We're taking your call at 543-KUOW, and we're talking with the co-founder of the Evergrey, the Seattle newsletter, Monica Guzman. I just want to say that the idea, I hear this, and it's hard for me to relate to the idea, and I've lived here, I guess, 25 out of the last 35 years, and I would suggest to locals that they not think of themselves as having more status, or that newcomers not think of themselves as having less status. What is that, how is that even useful? I don't know where that comes from. I feel like there's a kind of anti-immigration sentiment there. So if you're somebody who thinks that you're having been here a long time gives you status, then I think you have a window into the anti-immigration voter that you might not even realize.
Yeah, maybe you do. I think it's because of the transformation in the city and how felt and personal it is to people. Like, we talk to people who, you know, traffic, it seems like the simple thing, but traffic really can impact how you live in the city in more ways than just how long it takes you in the morning to get to work. Mm. It's, you know, you're part of a club or you like hanging out with your friends in another neighborhood. And if it just takes that much longer to get there, your access to your own city is cut off.
Definitely.
So I think when we talk about status, in a way, we're talking about who has the right to define this city and to kind of assert it, and who has less of a right? Who should kind of stand back and let the rest of us decide and set the tone for what the city's going to be? I think that's what it comes down to.
And I'd rather think of it as that my having been here a long time might make me myopic. Like, I don't even desire to be able to define my city, as strange as that sounds. And I know that's kind of the premise. A lot of people love having the local identity. I would always like to be more full of question marks. And realize, because I've lived I've lived in Belltown and Capitol Hill and Mercer Island and Federal Way and worked in the U District. And all those things are tiny slices of our identity. I'd like to be fully aware that I don't know what I'm talking about when I talk about who we are. And I can always learn more, know more tomorrow than I do today.
Yeah. And actually, someone on our Facebook page said, you earn local status when you stop caring whether other people think you're a local.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, isn't
I like that
the Seattle way, right? To just lay back, like, do your own thing. You do you. That's Seattle.
I want to play something that someone posted, I think it was on your Facebook page, the Evergrey Facebook page, in discussing this whole thing about newcomers. And it was audio. Somebody linked to John Roderick, who's the lead singer guitarist for The Long Winters. What's a more
right.
local name than The Long Winters?
Right.
And he also ran for Seattle City Council. And he was in Portland at the XOXO conference talking about the difference between how he says, I don't hate Portland, but I choose to live in Seattle. And I'm telling you, Portland, why that is. Mm-hmm. So he was saying in Portland, I think I have the whole exchange here. He was talking about Portland being sort of, I don't know if he used the word complacent, but that it was
contentment.
Content. It's a place designed for you to be content.
Exactly.
Portland says, should we dust our old library? We'd better get started making a ladder. And Seattle says, tear down the library! But I live in Seattle because Seattle has an energy of dissatisfaction with itself. Seattle is a striving town. Seattle is not trying to be contented. It is doing this other, crazier thing. It's trying to impress Tokyo. And that's me. I don't want to be contented. I never have. I want to impress Tokyo.
I love John Roderick for that because I love the honesty where he knows that you could listen right now. You may have listened to that and think, ugh, I can't stand people who want to impress Tokyo. Or, you know, I want to be content. I don't want to be dissatisfied. I don't want to be a striver. And he's owning the fact that, yeah, I get if that's not your thing, it's my thing, and Portland and Seattle are not the same.
Yeah, I really love that. But I think there's a tension there because we do have pride over being a place where people are a little bit chill, a little bit more relaxed. We're not like the East Coast. We don't walk around in suits all day, right? Go look for somebody dressed up right now. You won't find them.
Yeah.
I mean, we want to be happy, but we want to have a good world around us. We want to have a good life around us. And so we'll strive to make sure that happens. And we have a lot of ambitions and a lot of ideas and a culture all around us that encourages us to pursue those ideas.
You came from where again?
I came immediately from Michigan, where I was working at a small paper for just a few months, but I mostly grew up in New England.
Okay. So, old New England, right?
Exactly.
There's a question like that. I like how you framed it, that we don't want to be strivers, and we don't want to be establishment, you know, like New England. We don't want to be strivers like, I don't know, if we think that's the Bay Area or Manhattan or something, but yet we want to strive to make the world a better place.
I think it's almost like we're fighters. I mean, you see that with our politics right now, right? We're just active. We're out there. We're engaged. That was something that surprised me when I moved here, too.
Monica Guzman of the Evergrey, Seattle's newsletter. I'm glad you moved here, and I'm glad you came into the studio.
I love this city. Woohoo!
We love you. We love it. What's it, L.A.? We love it! thanks for being here, and thanks for calling in to The Record today on KUOW Seattle.